This is Neil Adams, and you've reached the higher level of Nerdvana.
Ladies and gentlemen, trees and multiforms, welcome to the podcast.
Robo fucking cop.
As far as I'm concerned, Bruce Willis can go get a bag of dicks. Get off my shit.
Confessions of a Movie Snob.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, trees and multiforms, welcome to the podcast. I am Aaron.
And I'm Ethan.
Jeez, you gotta love that lag. And we are back after a 2-3 week break, something like that.
What was that?
Hearing that was a loud motorcycle driving by.
Hearing a motorcycle. And, If you're familiar with the show at all, you might recognize the voice on the other end, but it is a friend of the show, number two guest of all time, maybe just by numbers, but you know, one of my favorites we've ever got. It's Ed Douglas from ComingSoon.net. Say hello, Ed.
Oh, hey. Well, thanks a lot. That's very kind of you. Yeah. To say that.
Love having you on our show. It's good stuff. Okay. Now
it's been a while, I think. It's been a while too.
Since the start of the year, we did our favorite movies of 2012, and I don't remember what we did after that, but we did two shows like in a row, week after week. But we're having show Ed on tonight. Tonight's going to be kind of a topical show. It's going to be an interesting show. It's going to be something unlike what we've ever done. But I don't even know how to get into this. But tonight we are going to be talking about. We're going to be talking about cancer and I think we said viral outbreak movies. And our reason for that is, if you're friends with Ed, if you're friends with us, you've been seeing us, you know, kind of talk a little bit about his situation lately, but, we're going on almost 2 months ago now, huh? Ed was, diagnosed with acute leukemia and he's been kind of going through all that fun stuff with the chemotherapy and this and that, so on and so forth. Not having a fun time, but he's still kicking in there. But I think part of it is he is bored out of his mind, and he said he wanted to do a podcast. And so I said, you know, absolutely, you know that you're always welcome on. And, you know, kind of in my head, I was thinking, you know, I said, well what topic would you want to do? And he's like, let me think about it. And like immediately in my head, I was thinking cancer movies. So I'm like, that would be really insensitive of me to bring up. And 2 days later, he's all cancer movies. So I'm like, okay, it's still Ed. So we got that going on. Go ahead.
The problem with cancer movies though is that there's so many bad ones. That's the problem. The biggest problem.
Yeah, I sort of noticed that too. Going through making up this list, I'm like, man, I haven't seen a lot of these movies, and two, some of the ones I've seen are fucking terrible.
And here's my thing about it. I'm gonna throw my cards on the table. Is I've known this show is coming for a couple of weeks now because of scheduling and this and that, so on and so forth. And I've been really working at my list. And I was trying for a good solid week there to make a list where everybody survived. That's fucking impossible. So that is not what's going to happen on my list. Unfortunately, I wish I could have done that, but I was unable. And also, it would have been false of me anyway, but it's going to be an interesting list because I do think that there are some that are really goddamn terrible, but there are also some that are good. So,
are we going to talk about the bad ones too? Or are we going to talk about some of those because there are some really bad ones?
I'm sure we will. I'm sure they're going to come up because, you know, I had to I just kind of had to put some in here because I'm all like, hey, I need 10. But there are some that I think are overall bad movies that have like, you know, an element or two that I like about them. And I have one that's in my mind pretty solidly. But part of what we wanted to do here is, you know, Ed's got a lot of friends and a lot of people are on Facebook and they're asking him tons of questions. Ed is obviously busy with his, with his wellness program of getting better. And we're just trying to do like a consolidated update on what's going on. Unfortunately, he told it all to Ethan and I before the show, and like a moron, I wasn't recording it. So if you want to give the quick rundown on that, Ed, we'll just get moving and talk about some movies.
Sure, I'll give a quick update. So basically, a quick update is, I've been in the hospital for about 5 weeks. I've had 3 days off where I went to see Iron Man 3. But I had, you know, my first round of chemo went well. My second round of chemo is going okay, but it's been a little bit touching. It's a little bit tougher. When I went out of hospital, I basically got a blood clot and a blood infection, which basically screwed everything up completely. And that's been kind of like the the big thing right now. But otherwise, you know, I'm getting out of hospital tomorrow, so I'll be back out. And hopefully, you know, I probably can't see any movies until after the weekend because I can't really go out in big crowds with, you know, with my condition. You can't, you know, my white blood cell count is kind of low, which means I can't really go into crowds.
Mm-hmm. Right. Infection.
Worried about, like, you know, germs and, yeah, colds, all that stuff. So basically, which is kind of funny because we're talking about viral outbreak movies. So I can't go into theaters with viral outbreaks. So basically, I think probably Monday or Tuesday, or probably Tuesday, I'll probably go catch up on some movies that I missed Wednesday. We'll see.
What are you looking forward to?
Yeah, but I'm not. Go ahead.
I was just saying, what are you looking forward to movie-wise?
I've been wanting to see Great Gatsby. I've been wanting to see that for a long time, yeah. So I'll probably see that. I want to see Fast and Furious. I want to see Star Trek.
Fast and the Furious?
I literally haven't seen anything. I mean, I never even saw Pain and Gain or Oblivion or any of those.
Oh wow!
So I've really been out of it. But the good thing is I actually have some contacts here, so I actually can go to some, like, regular screenings. I actually already have press screenings lined up here.
Right on.
For when I get out. So yeah, it's pretty good. It's pretty good. I actually got set up already. I did all that was about all my first week here. I got set up for press screenings, so I can try to catch some stuff, you know, before it comes out. But usually the press screenings here are like Wednesday before opening or something like that, you know.
Mm-hmm. I'd imagine that the interview you did with Baz was over the phone, right?
Oh yeah, that was a phone interview. Actually, that was the day actually I was starting chemo. It was like the second day of chemo.
That was a really good interview. I really liked that interview a lot.
Oh thanks. Yeah, no, it turned out really well, and I wasn't sure if it was just because, you know, I don't know if he felt bad for me because I think he obviously knew my situation. He must have known because I got the impression someone must have told him what was going on. But no, it was a really good interview. It was very candid, and it was great. I mean, just so you guys know, this chemo thing I'm talking about, it's literally like transfusions. It's very simple stuff. It's not like massive radiation, like, you know, big machines. It's like literally I'm getting transfusions.
So you're not sitting in a big chair like David Banner getting hit with gamma radiation?
No, not at all. I'm literally like lying in bed while I can do other things while they're giving me chemo.
I liked the David Banner just stuff going into there, though. That was awesome, Ethan. I liked that. You said David. That was fantastic.
David Banner.
Yeah, Ed Smash is not happening anytime soon. Okay, good to know. Good to know.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
All right. Well,
they're getting rid of Mark Ruffalo for Edward Douglas in the next Avengers. Yeah.
Woohoo!
So,
sounds good.
Well, I'm very upset that I haven't gotten any kind of powers at all. I've been pumping radiation. I haven't gotten anything at all. It really kind of sucks.
What about isn't healthy a power?
Healthy a power? I guess so. Yeah, I guess so.
Not the best power, but you know, it's a power.
So, I was hoping for something, you know, a little more. You know, you get pumped with the chemicals, all these radioactive chemicals. You figure, you know, you get something out of it. But
all right, well, cool. Sounds like you got everything rocking over there, and you're getting taken care of. Unfortunately, I haven't looked at your the Pay It Forward or whatever campaign. I haven't looked at that in a while. The last time I saw it was kicking ass. It was doing really well.
Yeah. Yeah, it's about $53,000.
Okay, you hit your goal. That's awesome. Yeah. That's so good. That's so
good.
It's fantastic.
Yeah.
It's great. Except when I get a check and try to go to a bank and try to deposit it. That's why I'm not really sure what's going to happen.
Screw that.
It's not like, it's, no, I, I'm like, I'm like, I seriously have no idea if I can walk into a bank with a $53,000 check and say, here, I want to open an account. Like, I have no idea what's going to happen when I try to do that.
I say
you're
cash
get a visit
it
from Homeland Security, probably.
No, I say probably cash it. Tens and twenties and roll around in it. That's what I say. And then go take it to the bank. And then take it to the bank.
Like, lots of coins.
Unfortunately, guys, it's gonna go pretty fast. There's already a lot of bills lined up ready for that money. So
I'm sure the hospital will be willing to just take your check. You wouldn't have to go to the bank. Unfortunately.
Yeah.
But
exactly.
Okay. Well, why don't we talk about why we're here? I mean, it's good that Ed's moving on, but, you know, Ed, you know, first and foremost, we talk about movies with him. So let's do that. We are here tonight to talk about cancer and viral outbreak movies. At the start of the show, we talked a little bit about this already and saying that this is a weird genre because there's a lot of bad movies in it. That's very true. It's also... And I think some of the things that make it bad is because it can be a very emotionally manipulative genre, because they're all like, why don't we, I want to make a movie to, you know, make people cry. So give the bitch cancer, or like, you know, something like that. And, you know, viral outbreak movies. I can't tell you how many of those that I did not put on my list because they're zombie movies pretty much. But, you know,
Right. Well, those are kind of, I mean, I don't know. We're not considering zombies viral.
That's entirely up to
you. I am.
That's entirely okay, good, up
to you. It's one of the only ways I could actually make this list.
That's entirely up to you guys. I was trying to keep it, you know, somewhat realistic, but I failed. I'm not going to say I didn't, but I tried. But, yeah, it's a strange genre because, you know, because of the reasons I mean, what did you guys find, you know, making this list? I mean, obviously you realize there's some bad ones, but what else did you find?
Well, I split them in half. My top six, I have half and half. So I have half cancer movies and half viral outbreak movies. And then I kind of only got nine. I couldn't even like 10. I couldn't really find a 10th one I even liked enough to include, but I kind of have one, but it's not the one I like that much, but I don't know. I think I got my top six in good shape.
Okay, that's good.
Yeah, I had to stretch a bit, and obviously I got some zombie movie or two in here, and at least two of the ones I had involve cancer in a major facet of the movie, or or at least take place all in a hospital. So.
Okay.
This was, going through this list and finding, you know, outbreak, you know, viral outbreak movies and ones that I'd seen and two that I'd seen that I had liked, was actually fairly difficult because especially with the viral outbreak movies, there are a lot of those out there that are just god awful.
Yeah.
And, talking zombie movies, talking anything like that, you know, it's like, I just could not in good conscience put them on the list in any way, shape or form. So it was difficult. This was definitely a list that one was difficult and two was honestly not a lot of fun to make because there's a lot of depressing shit on this list.
That's totally true. There's a lot of depressing shit on here. It was not fun to make. Ethan, I think that maybe we didn't have very much fun making this, you know, A, because it's depressing as all get out, but B, because we've had such a good time making our lists lately. We've had some badass lists lately, and it was a lot of fun that we had to
make. Yes, we have.
And then in these ones, it's all like, okay, well, this didn't suck about this movie. I mean, there's a lot of that. Like, you know, overall, I'm not a big fan of the movie, but they have an element or two that I like. Or I got one that I downright despise on my list, but it has a funny story attached to it. But so we got that going on. So, yeah.
Who starts?
Go ahead.
Who starts?
Ethan's going to start. Ethan, what's your number six?
Well, my number six is moving square into the realm of zombies. It's going to have to be the Zack Snyder Dawn of the Dead. And that was a sort of last minute addition. Zombie movies can be a lot of fun, and this one is pretty much they sort of leave it up to what is the cause of it. So, Dawn of the Dead was I thought was a lot of fun. I've seen the original one, and the original one is okay, very very dated. I've never been a huge fan of at least the latter Romero movies, but I did like the new Zack Snyder one. I thought it was a lot of fun and a fairly good update. So that, I mean, it's nothing more to say really about that. It's just my number six, Dawn of the Dead.
Yeah, not on my list. I mean, like I said, I was trying to keep cancer movies off of it. I like this one though. I mean, I would definitely prefer the original. The original is a classic, but this is one of those like remakes. It's a remake of a movie that didn't particularly need to be remade that turned out mm-hmm. well, I thought. I did like this movie.
Yeah.
I own this movie. I like it, but it's not on my list, so. Okay. Anything to say about it, Ed?
Well, I have it on my list later, sometime later. Okay. So I'll talk about it. I mean, it's outside my top six though, so.
Okay. Sounds good. Okay, Ed, what's your number six?
Okay, this is a movie I know neither of you have seen. It's a French movie. So there's that right there. it's called A Christmas Tale. It's by a French director called Arnaud Desplechin. And the reason it made my list, actually, it's kind of funny. It's very timely for my situation because it's basically about a family gets together for Christmas, and one of the mother of the house has leukemia, and she basically needs a bone marrow transplant. And there's a whole thing about who's going to give her the bone marrow transplant and. So it's very timely for my situation because I'm going to have to do that eventually myself. And so, but it's a movie I saw back in the day when it first played the festivals, and I kind of liked it. I thought it was good, but it kind of really kind of resonated more once I started realizing that I'm kind of in the same situation right now where I have to kind of like get this bone marrow. Because when I first saw it, I was kind of like, I didn't really get it. I didn't really get the bone marrow transplant. I didn't understand why it was such a big deal at all. And now after I've, you know, talked to doctors, because basically the bone marrow transplant is going to be the big operation for me. It's not like the chemo is all fine, but that bone marrow transplant is going to be like the big thing, which, you know, could be like months and months of, you know, knocking me out kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But really, really kind of where that really resonated me in hindsight after getting leukemia, I was realized, wow, that movie was really, you know, I really understand what they were going through now, what they were going through, like, you know, trying to decide who would donate, you know, the bone marrow and why it was so dangerous and, you know, all that other stuff. So yeah, Christmas Tale, Honor de Plachon came out, I think, maybe 4 or 5 years ago, I think. So that's my cancer movie contribution.
I heard about it when I was looking it up, and it did sound like something. It's something that's relatively critically acclaimed, but it isn't something I've seen.
Yeah, it was a Cannes. I think it I don't know if it won any awards at Cannes, but it was definitely like one of those. It's one of those Cannes. It's really one of those like kind of snobbish French Cannes Film Festival type movies. But I liked it when I saw it, mm-hmm. but like I don't think I really understood it as much until I got hit with it myself. So,
mm-hmm.
but, yeah, it's a really good movie though, I think. So, you know.
Okay. Very cool. Moving on. My number six, I believe is by far the newest one on my list, but it is the 2011 Steven Soderbergh directed Contagion. This is going to be one that's falling under my viral outbreak movies. This is a movie I actually didn't particularly like when I first saw it. It isn't a hell of a lot of fun to watch. I mean, it's a very clinical, very cold movie, kind of explaining, like, you know, what would happen if there was like a widespread, well, I don't even know these words, but a pandemic, epidemic, I don't know. But it's like some sort of huge viral outbreak to where, you know, it was, you know, taking out like a large proportion of the population. It was interesting in that, you know, everybody wasn't turning into zombies, you know. It was interesting in that, you know, they weren't using the viral outbreak was actually like, you know, the point of the story, the point of the movie. You know, it was, you know, what was, you know, driving along the plot versus it being a clever vehicle to get us zombies or, you know, what have you. It's Steven Soderbergh, so it's obviously it's well directed, it's a smart script. I've seen it twice, and I saw it right when it first came out in the theater, and once when it first came out on DVD, and I'm barely remembering much about it. I remember Matt Damon, Gwyneth Paltrow, and I want to say Marion Cotillard was in it, Bryan Cranston. Good, you know, it's like any one of those Soderbergh movies. They have a huge ensemble cast, but it was, you know, smart movie, mm-hmm. good movie. I liked it. It's my number six. Have either of you guys seen it?
You haven't seen it?
No, I've never seen it. I've heard of it, but I've just never seen it.
Yeah, Jude Law is also, that's right. He was the main character, actually. I missed the main character.
Jude Law plays this really kind of this blogger who kind of like discovers like the cure for the viral outbreak, and he's kind of like getting mobbed because he you know, he has a cure. But that's actually my number four movie. I love that movie. I'm a big fan of Contagion. I was really surprised. I saw it like early. I saw it like maybe a couple months before, you know, people normally do. And I was really blown away because I thought it'd be more of like a thriller, like a horror thriller type movie. And it was really not. It was really kind of a drama and more like, you know, it really was held like fairly, even though there was like some real tension, it was really kind of held back a little bit where it was about the characters and the people. And it wasn't just about like terror and people like, you know, mm-hmm. killing each other and, you know, doing all that stuff, I've seen it probably about 4 or 5 times, I think, at this point. So it's definitely my number. It's my number four. So
it's a good one.
Cool.
It's a good one.
I'll have to check it out at some point.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. No, it's definitely worth checking out as a jet. You know, especially if you're ever a germaphobe, it's like if you're not a germaphobe, you'll become one after you see the movie. Because it literally is like you. If it follows the path of the virus and you see, like, you know, door handles and you see how it passes through it, it really kind of freaks you out a bit.
Yeah, awesome. Alrighty, Ethan, number five.
My number five, still firmly entrenched in viral outbreak. You'll have to forgive me. I'm not going to have any real passion for talking about any of these until my bottom, to my my well, my bottom my my one, two, and three, really. But this is number five is I Am Legend, if for anything, just for Will Smith's performance, honestly. I really enjoyed his performance. The Hollywood ending gets to me as far as, it being horribly, horribly Hollywood. Otherwise, it's a it of the movies that I came up with for this list, it was one of the better ones, put it that way.
not on my list.
I hate that.
I really don't like.
I hate the movie.
I don't like the movie. I like Will, but you know, Will Smith is a good actor. You know, but mm-hmm. It's like the whole thing with the dog. I found very emotionally manipulative. I'm going to be saying that a lot tonight. But Will Smith's good in it, and Ethan's completely right. This doesn't deserve a lot of passion. And you know, my only passion I'm going to get out of is I really didn't like it very much, and that's about it. But yeah,
fair enough.
I hate Iron Legend when I first saw it. I've never seen it. I've only seen it once. I hated it. I never saw it again.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, I didn't like Will Smith in it. I thought the CG, whatever they were idiotic, were terrible. And I, you know, I don't know. I the fact that it takes place in New York also, which kind of, you know, I actually saw them shooting some of the stuff where they're shooting some of the scenes, because they were shooting at like 4 a.m. And mm-hmm. It's pretty cool what they did to New York, how they turned New York into like this wasteland. But otherwise, I don't know. I thought the movie was just a waste. It was just a waste. And I don't like Will Smith that much to really say much more about it. So,
okay. Well, it's a, like I said, it's on this list as more of a, needed something to put there.
filler, basically.
It's filler, yes. I really like Will Smith in it. It's not a movie that I, you know, own or anything like that, mind you. But that's about it, really. I don't think I've seen it in several years at this point.
Okay.
Yeah, me neither. I've seen it. I'd be surprised if I've seen it more than once. And I was like, yep, that was that. And yeah, I was a big fan of the book.
Mm-hmm.
And I just saw like, wow, really? Then moved on. Haven't really thought about it much except for this show when it's come up tangentially here and there. All right, Ed, what's your number five?
And
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
And also, they keep talking about a sequel too, and I don't know if that's ever going to happen. I mean, that's just, you know.
I don't think they should ever do a sequel.
No, I don't think so
either. Just
move on. Yeah, It made so much money. But
yeah, I mean the preview for Dark Knight that was on the IMAX version was great.
Sure.
Oh, that's right. That was the big thing. That was the big thing. They actually did a preview of the IMAX in front of it. That's right. I remember that now. Yeah.
Yep. That's true.
Yep.
Okay.
So so my number five is 28 Days Later with Danny Boyle, directed by Danny Boyle. This was came out I think in 2002, 2003. I think it's around then. It's definitely a viral outbreak movie. It's not a zombie movie. It involves a virus called rage, which basically starts attacking people and turning them to raging monsters. And it stars Cillian Murphy as a guy who's basically been in a hospital for 28 days, gets out, and he basically finds himself completely in a London, completely empty, except for these people who are have this virus and a couple other survivors. And he basically, the idea is to survive and try to, find a safe haven and, not get the virus. And it's a great movie. It's funny. And I really feel that the 28 Days Later, because the 28 days also, one of the things is I found out about my leukemia is that it's like 28 days to remission. And I feel like there's got that 28 days thing that must have been when Alex Garland wrote this movie, there must be some kind of leukemia thing involved with it, because I feel like, the virus affects the blood, the leukemia affects the blood. I figured he must have known someone who had leukemia in his family or something like that, and it must have been affected when he wrote that movie, because it seems like there's so many connections to leukemia in that movie that it's kind of ironic also. But also, again, it's one of those things you kind of start thinking about when you're in the hospital. I have nothing else to do but think about stuff. But
it's actually my number four too. Four. So I loved 28 Days Later. It's one of those movies that has a great element to it. I mean, you could say, oh, they're zombies or they're not zombies. It doesn't really matter because they're secondary to the movie. It's all about surviving in this little pocket of apocalypse really that's going on in the movie. And Christopher Eccleston is in there as the commander of this this military group, you know, and I think it was the first time I really remember seeing Christopher Eccleston. It's a great role, and it's obviously the first time I remember seeing Cillian Murphy, another great role, and it just wasn't your goal. Obviously not your typical outbreak movie, not your typical zombie movie, but it had a great element to it of really this them being this realistic survival thing. Is I really one thing it really rang with me that you don't see anywhere else is there's a scene where they're raiding some subway concession stand, and they're getting a bunch of candy bars, and he eats a bunch, and then he has a sugar crash, you know. And I thought that was kind of an interesting sort of interesting thing, something that you don't really think about, you know. And I liked it. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I saw that movie. I saw that movie like at midnight. Actually, I remember where I saw it. There was a Tribeca Film Festival midnight movie. I knew Danny Boyle's work before, you know, from Trainspotting and all of the other things. But when I saw it, it was just the most amazing crowd to see it with. It was like a midnight movie. You know, there hadn't been a lot of buzz about it so far. Mm-hmm. Like I hadn't heard much about it, so it was like really took a lot of people by surprise when they saw it for the first time. So.
Yeah, by the time I saw it, you know, it was just the normal release. And, you know, by that time, I do remember this was a movie with a ton of buzz when it came out. I mean, it was like one of those trailers that came out that like had like all the critics quotes on the trailer. It's like the scariest movie you'll see this year. And I remember I was really, really jazzed to see it. And I really liked it until the army showed up. And then, you know, after that, I'm all like, you know, it felt a little too formulaic for me after that point. But I liked it, and it's a really good movie. If we're just going to talk actors in it, it's one of the first times I remember seeing Brendan Gleeson post Braveheart, other than AI, but he was barely in that. I remember that. It's a good movie. It's my number 9. I could put it high on my list because you know we can wax poetic all we want about how they're not zombies or whatever, but they're some sort of fucking creature thingy that isn't really what I was going for on my list. So I put it high on my list, but I do like it quite a bit.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. All right. Moving on. My number 5. My number 5 is one that it's pretty funny that I just said that I put one, you know, high or low or whatever you want to call it on my list because of, you know, how goofy it makes the people, because I chose, I don't know the year. I'm not going to pretend to know the year, but I chose Robert Rodriguez's Planet Terror. I think I went with that one, you know, that low because of the fact that they didn't lose their personality per se when they became infected. You know, they were still, you know, who they were. Like, I remember, you know, like Josh Brolin's character, you know, still was aware of his wife and his kid, well, his ex-kid or whatever you want to call it. It's just like one of those movies that, I like. A lot of people are really starting to get down on, Robert Rodriguez lately. This is one of those movies I like. It's fun to watch. It's obviously it was a passion project for him and Tarantino, but I liked it. Mm-hmm. I liked it, so I put it down on my number 5, and I'm okay with it. What do you guys think of it?
I enjoyed it. I thought it was all right. Of the Grindhouse ones, Death Proof was by far my favorite, but this one was entertaining. Not one I was totally enamored with.
Yeah, I feel the same way. I feel like I like Death Proof a lot more.
Yeah, I never too. I loved it.
I've watched Death Proof a couple times, and I never saw Planet Terror again after the first time.
I liked it. Okay, so that's my number 5. Ethan, number 4.
My number 4 was 28 Days Later.
And then okay. Ed's number 4 was something I've already done.
Was Contagion. It was Contagion. So what's your number 4?
yeah, moving right along. My number 4 is, I want to say it came out in 1996, something like that. I don't remember who directed it, but it's Marvin's Room. It's a movie I've seen. It's weird, but I've seen it a whole bunch. I mean, I don't think it was one of those, like, you know, I had it on DVD or anything like that. It was just like kind of on the pay channels a lot. And growing up in the country, I just watched a lot of movies, and it's one that I saw a lot. I don't know a whole lot about the genesis of it, but it to me, it felt like a movie that very well might have been based off a play, just because of like the structure of it, the way that worked. But the basic story was, I want to say, I think Diane Keaton had Diane Keaton and Meryl Streep and Robert De Niro and Leonardo DiCaprio and a bunch of cool ass actors in it. And I want to say Diane Keaton had bone cancer or something, and she needed a bone cancer transplant or something. And Meryl Streep played her sister, and she called her to see if they were compatible, if she could, you know, be a donor. And she could not, and she had a son. And the son was played by, you know, Leonardo DiCaprio. This is 1996 Leonardo DiCaprio. So this is, you know, pre-Titanic and all that stuff. So still young Leonardo DiCaprio. And he was playing like a rebellious, petulant kid. And he didn't want to have – he didn't want to do the bone marrow transplant. And I don't really remember why, other than he was being young and rebellious and stuff like that. And the movie was kind of about those two's relationship. And I remember there's a great scene in it when – Meryl Streep is yelling at Leonardo DiCaprio. It's like, I'm not gonna let my sister die so you can have one of your moods. And it was a good movie. I liked it. It's my number four. And have either of you seen it or heard of it?
I've heard of it. It's funny. I haven't seen it because I feel like I should try to look for it because it seems like it's very, very relevant. Also, it's also about leukemia patient and stuff like that. But It's really funny. I haven't seen it. I mean, I've definitely heard of it. I know I've heard of it. It probably fell into my 90s not really seeing movies era, because I didn't really see movies from the 90s that much. I saw mainly, you know, I had this big gap of movies where I was busy in the studio working, so I didn't see movies at all. Mm-hmm. So I definitely missed it. But it definitely sounds like it is based on a play. You were right. It is based on a play. So it
felt like,
you know, but it sounds interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, it's one of those. I'm a big fan of Leonardo DiCaprio. I have been forever, and you know, I didn't even fall prey to the anti-Leo crap during Titanic. But this is one of those good dramatic roles from him from that period. You know, something like, you know, Gilbert Grape or This Boy's Life or anything like that. It's one of those roles that doesn't come up a lot. And I thought he was, you know, very good, and he's very good at playing the young, angsty, angry teen. And it's a good movie. You should check it out. I liked it. It's my number four.
It's funny. I'm reading the credits of the director afterwards. He did Marvin's Room, and then basically went from that to then he started doing Frasier, Everybody Loves Raymond.
Oh, wow.
Two and a Half Men, and Hope. But he basically went to do TV, and then he did a movie called Who Do You Love in 2008, which I don't know if I've seen that either. But Who Do You Love? Have I seen that movie? Leonard Chess. Oh, maybe I have seen that movie. But he definitely seems to have like kind of disappeared from movies after making that movie, which is kind of strange.
It is kind of funny because you're naming off all that stuff, like, you know, Frasier and Everybody Loves Raymond. Marvin's Room is not a funny movie. I mean, it's serious as a heart attack.
No, I know.
So I mean, it's kind of weird that he went. You know, maybe he's doing what he feels he's better suited for now. Who knows? We'll just have to see.
Yeah.
All right, Ethan, what's your number?
I'm familiar with it, but I've never seen it.
I liked it. It's my number three. I'm sorry, my number four. What's your number three?
My number three, reaching back, way back. It's the classic, seminal classic, The Seventh Seal.
Wow.
Yep.
Okay.
You know, talking about viral outbreak movies, that's a viral outbreak movie. Wow. It's been over a decade since I saw this movie last, but it's still a very powerful and very beautifully filmed movie. It obviously is what introduced me to Max von Sydow, and who is still alive. You know,
yes, he is.
I met him. I know he's alive. I met him a bunch of times.
That's sort of an inside joke. When Minority Report came out, I saw he was in it, and I was like, I thought he was dead.
Because because Ethan knew him from, I think, The Seventh Seal, and I think he knew him from Exorcist, and he thought he was really that old. And I'm like, no.
Yes.
He's that old now.
But he was like 9,000 years old. Yeah, he's immortal. He can't die.
Yeah, he's that old.
But The Seventh Seal, you know, I mean, it's obviously, it was the first in the, I think this was the first. First in the Strawberries trilogy. Mm-hmm. I can't remember the name of the other ones off the top of my head, but great, absolutely great film. It's obviously foreign and black and white, and you know, people will probably be horribly put off by actually ever having to watch it. But it's obviously it's about the Black Death, and about how basically you have death that wanders in and talks to this main character. And let's see. The main character, of course, is or the you know, directed by, of course, written and directed by Ingmar Bergman. I can never pronounce his name right. And done in 1957. So it's an old. It's obviously it's reaching back in time there, but it's an amazing, an absolutely amazing film. And it sort of introduces a lot of tropes or a lot of cliches that you sort of think about, you know, playing chess with death and things like that. And sort of how, you know, death sort of wanders in. And I always remember the very haunting last shot of the movie is death plus the five or six people from the movie, in silhouette walking against with death at the head of them walking against the sunrise or the moon or something like that. And it's an absolutely powerful, wonderful film. And it's, you got a lot of great symbolism to it. It's just a great movie.
Yep. That's a classic. I mean, if they haven't seen it,
it's on Criterion.
Yeah. It's got a Criterion. Wow. I have a movie coming.
Well, go ahead. I was saying that I was definitely thinking outside the box because I would never have gone back that far to think of anything that far back. But it's a great movie. I would never have thought of that because I don't go back that far.
It's a fantastic movie. All right, Ed, what's your number three?
My number three is 12 Monkeys by Terry Gilliam.
It's my number three. That's my number three.
Oh, well, there you go. I was surprised. Yeah. I thought someone would jump on that one already, but since I'm first, I get to talk about it first, damn it. So 12 Monkeys, it's Terry Gilliam. It came out in 95, about the same time as Marvin's Room. Mm-hmm. And it was based on a short film called La Jetée, and it basically involves Bruce Willis getting sent back in time to stop a viral outbreak. And it's a really fascinating movie. I think it's one of Terry Gilliam's best, definitely in his top, you know, five movies of all time. Really brilliant movie. It's Brad Pitt's in it. Brad Pitt has a small role. He's kind of a crazy guy because basically when Bruce Willis goes back in time, they think he's crazy. So he gets put up in an institution, and that's when he meets Brad Pitt, who's sort of a crazy guy also. And it's a great film. I've seen it many, many times. I wish I've seen it more recently, but as far as a viral outbreak, that's a big key part of the story, even though it's not just about that, but it's the time travel, Terry Gilliam. You know, it really has. It's probably one of his more serious movies too, because I feel like he's done a lot of kind of whimsical, quirky movies, and it's definitely one of his more serious movies. Yeah. So that's my number three.
Yeah, the design on this movie is absolutely amazing.
Absolutely great.
It's like Terry Gilliam, I think, at doing some of his absolute best work.
Yeah.
And it's the first time I remember Brad Pitt sort of breaking out of that pretty boy role that he was sort of stuck in for the longest time. Was this movie, because I mean he got an Academy Award nomination. I think this was his first nomination.
I believe so, yeah.
He was amazing in it, and it was it's one of those things that you didn't really expect Brad Pitt to do, because it's just was really out there, and it really wasn't this, because I mean he was doing things like, you know, Legends of the Fall and things like that at this point, and so you're like, okay. And this movie was just absolutely very powerful, very, very well done, well written, well acted movie. It was the first time I really remember seeing a movie with time travel element to it that wasn't, you know, over the top. You know, they're not going 88 miles an hour. They're not going, you know, traveling through time in a phone booth. They just stick them in this thing and they wake up and they're in the past, you know? And even then it's just sort of a secondary to it. And the movie kind of plays with you saying, well, are they really going into the past? Are they, you know, is this a big hallucination and you know, all that stuff. It's also one of the first movies I remember John Leguizamo in. Hmm. Because if memory serves me, he's another one of the guys, one of the either, I guess, inmates or somebody from the future, and like gives him a gun to try to kill the bad guy with at the end of the movie, and you know it's had that sort of great element to the movie where you're not, that nothing is wrapped up at the end as far as, oh well, he fixed everything. It's like, no, everything happened, and there you go. It's a great movie. I really enjoy it, and that's why it hit number two on my list.
I could
Aaron, where's it?
Well, yeah, I mean, I've seen it. It's my number three. I like it a lot. I completely forgot John Leguizamo was in it. When I think about that movie,
I don't know. I'm not so sure he is. I can't remember. I mean, I don't remember him at all. I guess, I don't know. I'll think it's been
many years since I saw it. So I mean, don't quote me on that.
Ethan Parker. But yeah, this is one of the first movies I remember seeing David Morse in, and I remember he was all weird because he had that long ponytail. And you know, obviously Brad Pitt was good in it. It's one of those few movies that it's one of those good Bruce Willis movies, and you know I like that when he's in good movies, and I love Terry Gilliam. I think that he's like one of those. I think he's one of those actors that's. He's not a very good. No, actually, he's an awesome actor. I mean, he did something with comedy, I guess, before. But he's one of those directors that I think is you know has his due coming. I think that he's going to start, you know, getting accolades. You know, I kind of think of him. I think of him as good of a director as somebody like Ang Lee, but somebody that you know really needs to like you know get in there and get his hands dirty and do all this. But I also kind of wonder if he will get those accolades because he is you know notoriously hard to work for and with.
Mm-hmm.
But I think he's a fan.
Well, I'm not sure. Well, I'm not sure if he's hard to work for or with. I think he just has a vision and he kind of you know it's you know he has a vision and he needs to get a certain thing in a certain way and. It's you know he's had a lot of bad luck. I mean with financing and all this other stuff. It's not been you know I don't think it's because he's difficult because he's actually always been a very affable person as far as I've known met him.
Yeah.
And I've known him, but I agree though I feel like he's definitely like due for another really really good big you know good movie like this.
Mm-hmm.
Like 12 Monkeys again, and maybe this new one he's doing is will be it. You know he's doing a movie with Christoph Waltz and Matt Damon, so maybe that's gonna be it. Who knows?
I hope so. You know, cause you know, like Dr. Parnassus could have been so good if it didn't have such a weird, a horrible production because of, you know Heath Ledger dying and you know keeping going for you know I guess sentimental reasons and you know, I don't know, but you know I love Terry Gilliam. I picked it. You know, it's a great movie. Don't get me wrong, but I picked it because of how much I like Terry Gilliam. Okay, moving on. Number twos, Ethan. What's your number two?
Well, I think Ethan didn't do his three yet, did he?
I'm sorry.
Three.
My number three was The Seventh Seal.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. Oh, so,
my number two was 12 Monkeys.
Yeah.
And, oh, okay. So what's your number three? Yeah.
My number three was 12 Monkeys. So it would be at this point your number two.
Well, there we go. We're all in the same place. Okay, good. So I guess back to Ethan.
No, we're back to you because Ethan's number two was 12 Monkeys.
Yes.
Oh, Jesus. Okay, great. Okay, so my number two is actually a cancer movie, and it's actually a movie that had a big impact on me. It's one of my favorite movies of – I don't think it was last year. I think it was like 2 years ago. But it's 50-50, which was written by Will Reiser, directed by Jonathan Levine, and it stars Joseph Gordon-Levitt and Seth Rogen. And it's a totally – all. It used to be called Down with Cancer. They changed it to 50-50 basically to be – politically correct, I guess.
Yeah.
And it's basically all about, you know, this guy dealing with cancer and his friend. It's a comedy and it's poignant. And honestly, this movie, I would not be as positive about my situation if not for this movie.
Yeah.
Because that movie really, it really kind of put me in a good place to deal with this. So.
Yes. And Enter the only cancer movie that really hit my that I really actually enjoyed. It's this one. It's actually my number one.
Yeah, it's my
number
one.
Oh, wow.
It's my number one.
I love this movie.
If you remember not this year, but last year when we did our favorite movies of the year, this is my number one 2 years ago. I mean, this is my favorite movie that came out the year before this past one. And
wow.
And it hasn't gone away. I mean, I love this movie. I've probably seen it 4 or 5 times since then. You know, it's a fantastic movie. I own it. It's a really good movie. It's one of those ones that it's kind of interesting. But go ahead. You can talk about it, you two, because I still have another movie to go still. But go ahead, Ed. I mean,
I'll say from my side, I mean, it really puts things in perspective. I mean, I literally, like when I got the diagnosis when I'm in the hospital in Vegas, which was like literally like 2 hours after I entered. Like the first thing I thought of was like, you know, okay, I'm gonna lose my hair. I took a more kind of a lighthearted, you know, approach to it. Cause I remember like I knew there was gonna be good, I knew there was gonna be bad, but I remember this movie was really, you know, it meant a lot to me before I had cancer, and it means a lot more to me now. So I mean, I've I downloaded it. I've already been seeing it. I've seen it a couple times since, you know, this happened, and mm-hmm. it's still great. It's still a great movie. It still really resonates even more now. So. Mm-hmm.
I know that I, like when I started finding out what was going on with you, I put it in the Blu-ray player because I don't know. I mean, yeah, it's about cancer and all that stuff, but it's poignant. I mean, it's something. It's one of those. It's like I said when we, you know, when I've talked about it, every time I've talked about it, it's a movie. It was a movie that snuck up on me, and it snuck up on me like right in my eye line though, because you know I'm a big Jonathan Levine fan. I'm a huge Joseph Gordon-Levitt fan. Actually, I like Seth Rogen when he does roles like this, and so I was excited about that. I like Anna mm-hmm. Kendrick. I heard that all. Not Jason Robards.
I know you're talking about the guy. I know you're talking about. It's the guy who was. Philip oh my God, Hall. I can't remember his name.
Philip Baker Hall.
Baker Hall, that's what
yeah,
I said.
Baker Hall, and I'm a fan of him, and so you know, I'm like, cool. So this should be good, and you know, I went to go see it, and I was still blown away by how good it was. I mean, I was really surprised at the anger that he took this role to. I mean, you know, this freaking Bryce Dallas Howard was just awful, but she was so good mm-hmm. in the role, but her character was so awful, and you know, it's just I love this movie. It's my number one, and you know, it's. You know, this isn't even like a, you know, this isn't even a stretch for me. You know, like to top a list because I like this movie so much. This is, yeah. Well, no, I have Planet Terror, but other than this is the only one on my list that I own. You know, I mean, it does mean much to me. It's got nothing to do with I got to talk cancer movies with Ed. So I talk. No, I love this movie. It was my number one movie of the year it came out. I still watch it often. I own it. It's a fantastic movie. Fantastic.
And I have to say that, like, look, in hindsight, watching again in hindsight, it's very, very accurate, I got to say. I mean, the stuff I've gone through, it's very accurate to some of the stuff you see in that movie, like, you know, mood-wise. And, like, you know, it's actually kind of scary because you kind of, like, you know, I think I've handled a little bit better. But, like, it's still, there's a lot of stuff which is very, very accurate. And that's because Will Reiser, the guy who wrote it, actually lived it. That's probably why, you know. That's mm-hmm. why they would make it keep it so accurate and really, you know, truthful.
Okay, I guess this is going to have to fall flat because I already talked my number one, and I still got to do my number two. Talking about my number two, Ethan before was talking about the Seventh Seal and how proud he was that he had a 1958, we decided? Well...
57.
1957, ooh. But we're going to be talking about a movie that's actually older than that. I'm actually... shocked that it didn't show up on Ethan's list. 1952, Akira Kurosawa. This is a fantastic. It's a movie. It's one of Kurosawa's, feudal Japan movies. I mean, it's a movie that was set in modern times, but 52, about a man finding out he has cancer and coming to terms with it with his son and things like that. It's Kurosawa, so the guy knows how to make a movie, kind of. So, lots of beautiful, beautiful shots, really good at evoking really powerful performances out of his main actors. I'm not good with Asian names, but the, I can't remember the name of the guy in it. Takashi Shimura plays the lead in it. There's a scene in it that right after he finds out that he's ill and he's not gonna make it, he goes home and he just gets under a blanket and cries. And it was it's really poignant. I mean, like today you're like, okay, yeah, whatever, but for 1952, it was kind of chilling. It's a fantastic. Have you seen this one, Ethan?
Yeah, I have seen it, but I think the last time I watched it was on Laserdisc.
Yeah, it's got a Criterion Blu-ray. It's pretty awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty awesome. I dig it quite a bit.
I honestly forgot all about it, I would have put it on my list.
I was pretty surprised it wasn't on your list. Have you seen it, Ed?
Akira? No, I heard of it, obviously, but I've never actually seen it.
Yeah, check it out. It's probably streaming on Hulu, because they have all the Criterion stuff.
Oh, okay.
So, it's a good one. I mean, it's Kurosawa. He knows how to make a movie, kind of. I mean, ask Ethan.
No, I love Kurosawa, but I tend to love his samurai movies. And
yeah,
I don't
that's
really
what's so remarkable about this one. I think this is his best not samurai movie or non-samurai movie. Okay. I really dig it a lot. So it's my number two. My number one was 50-50. I've talked a lot about that movie. I love that movie. It's got Joseph Gordon-Levitt in it. I love that. I just think it has so many elements that work so well, and on top of that, it's a, you know, it's a really solid, really strong screenplay. I dug the scene in it when they were destroying Bryce Dallas Howard's painting. That was awesome. That was a good scene, and I always kind of wonder, like, you know, how they filmed that. I wonder if they had a bunch of them, or they just, you know, just covered it from a lot of angles and just let them go to town. But it's a good movie. I like it a lot. So at this point, I guess we're going to be running down our list, and it's okay with Ed.
Oh, wait, I didn't do my number one yet.
Oh, you didn't? I'm sorry. Go ahead. Hit your number one.
Wait, did Ethan do his number one? What was Ethan's number one?
Ethan's number one
was 50-50 was my number one.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, so both of your number one was 50-50?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow. Okay. So I have a number one I can also do, which also didn't get in there. Wow. Okay.
Wow.
My number one was The Fountain by Darren Aronofsky.
You know, I haven't seen it. I didn't know it was about cancer.
You haven't seen it?
I like
it. Yeah, that's the whole point. The whole point of it is that Rachel Weisz has cancer and he's trying to cure her. And that's the whole plot for him. It's like, it has a whole time travel plot of him, you know, growing a tree and all this stuff. But yeah, I know it's the core of the story involves the middle section, which is the present day story, involves him. Hugh Jackman is a scientist trying to cure Rachel Weisz, his wife, as her cancer, and it kind of like folds in and out of different time periods. It involves like a futuristic thing where they're floating in space on a tree, and it involves a past thing where they're kind of going after the fountain of youth in Ponce de Leon type times. And it's really weird. It's a hard movie to explain, but it's also a movie that I've absolutely loved. Ever since I first saw it, I've seen it a bunch of times, but it's one of Darren Aronofsky's best movies, I personally feel. And, Black Swan and, you know, Requiem for a Dream. But The Fountain, I think, is one of his – probably one of his more underrated movies, because people just don't get it, what's happening in it. And I don't know if I could actually get it all myself, but, I mean, the core of the story is he's trying to cure her cancer, and – it kind of grows from that, and that's part of like the real heart of the movie. So, So The Fountain, Darren Aronofsky, is number one movie, and have you guys seen it or not? Haven't seen it or?
I have not, and I like Aronofsky. Ethan does not like him. He hasn't liked any of the movies he's ever made. I just haven't. I don't have a good reason for not seeing it other than I haven't. I mean, I like.
Oh wow! Okay.
I like Aronofsky. I like Rachel Weisz. I like Hugh Jackman. I knew about all the time travel stuff. I didn't know it had anything to do with her, you know, being sick or anything. But I just, you know, it's one. Like, sometimes I just don't see a movie for any good reason, and it's certainly on my radar. It is something I want to see. So
yeah, it's definitely worth seeing. But it's one of those movies that when you want to see it, you got to really focus on it. You can't just throw it on and have it in the background. You got to kind of really just watch it, because it's right. There's a lot going on, a lot of big ideas. Maybe too many big ideas, but, you know, but it's definitely classic Aronofsky.
Very cool.
Yeah, I only watch an Aronofsky movie if I absolutely have to. So.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. Not an Aronofsky fan, so.
I still think you would like The Wrestler. I stand firm on that you would like there. It's not a very typical Aronofsky. You know, it's
true. It's very different. That's true.
It's
yeah.
Small. You know what I mean? I mean, Aronofsky always has these big, big. arcing stories and crazy shit going on, like in Black Swan and all that. But with The Wrestler's a small, intimate movie. I like that one. And but I've also liked Requiem and Pie, and I love Pie. I'm fat, but I do like Aronofsky. I just haven't seen this one. It is certainly, I'll probably have to watch it now that I know more about it. So cool.
Oh, definitely. Absolutely.
Okay. And so that was, so now we're done with our lists?
Now we are done with our lists.
Hey, how about that? Now we can run down our list. Why don't you go ahead and run down your list, Ethan?
Well, my number 10, you know, my last several on my list are very much a stretch to try to get those on here. My number 10 is the a movie that I'm sure nobody remembers, called Medicine Man with Sean Connery.
No.
My number 9 was Outbreak. My number 8 was A Walk to Remember,
If anything, it was it's my addition to satisfy my lovely wife.
Uh-huh.
And my number six is my cop out. It's the series Breaking Bad, which I've only seen about five episodes of, and it's fantastic.
Isn't that a good fucking show?
What's that?
That's a good fucking show. I mean, at some point, I'm sure I would have brought up. At some point, I was going to bring it up. That, you know, if we were able to put TV in here, I would have totally had Breaking Bad in here. It's a good.
That's why it's my cop out, because I was like, I need another one. Fuck Breaking Bad, and there's no way I'm ranking Breaking Bad lower than, you know, Medicine Man, Outbreak, and The Walk to Remember. So, and that gets into my regular list. Number six, Dawn of the Dead. Number five, I Am Legend. Number four, 28 Days Later. Number three, Seventh Seal. Number two, 12 Monkeys. Number one, 50-50.
Very good. I love 50-50. But yeah, I'm glad you're finally watching Breaking Bad. It's a damn good show. Damn good show. Alrighty, my number 10 is a movie that's just goddamn awful, but I put it on here for one reason and one reason only, and it was, did I say what it was yet? It's my number 10 is My Life, the Michael Keaton and, Nicole Kidman movie. It's a movie like where, you know, Michael Keaton has terminal cancer and they have to deal with, you know, her, you know, he's going to die and she's pregnant with the kid. And so they're making up all these they're making all these videos for the kid and stuff like that. And basically, I like it because it's one of those movies where Michael Keaton acts. I mean, I love Michael Keaton very, very, very much. And he's a fantastic actor, and I thought this was good for him. And then my number nine is the Danny Boyle 28 Days Later. I said enough about it when we were talking about it on the list. My number eight is My Life Without Me. My number seven, if you remember right when I was talking about the list that I I said that I have one of these lists that I downright fucking despise, but I just put it on here because of the story. That one is, I don't remember the year, doesn't matter, but it's Love Story. You know, that fucking Ryan O'Neal movie and with that, you know, real love means never have to say that, you know. Never say you're sorry, shit like that. And, well, my story with that is I am a bastard. And part of being my bastard is, you know, I find out somebody cries in movies and I try to sneak in movies. I try to sneak movies in that are going to make them cry so I can laugh at them when they cry about stupid little things. And, so my ex-wife, you know, she who must not be named, the bitch, was one of those such people that cries at every fucking thing. And so, you know, over the years, I had snuck in, you know, shit like Old Yeller and made her cry and, you know, all the typical tear jerker movies. And, you know, I always had them like, you know, we'd go out and we'd rent the newest, you know, Nicholas Sparks movie or whatever swill it was that she wanted to watch. And I would, you know, rent, you know, something. And And sometimes I would just sneak in one of those movies just to be a dickhead to make her cry. So I, one of those times I snuck in Love Story because I know that it was going to make her cry. So we're watching it and, you know, it's getting to the point, you know, where, you know, she's over there crying and I'm over there feeling, you know, really happy about myself that I made her cry because like I said, I'm a jerk. And, you know, so she's sitting there and, you know, crying in the bed. And it's the part of the movie, if you've seen it, there's a part of at the end of the movie where it's obvious that she's not going to make it. And, you know, they're lying there and together and they're saying their goodbyes. And, you know, he says his part and she tries to say her part. And she just says, you know, I just want you to hold me. And I swear to God, she started bawling like a little girl and I felt like a asshole. But yeah, so I guess I just put that in there because the warm, fuzzy memories of making her unhappy with me. But it happened. Then we're going to get into the list. The list I already had. My number six was Contagion. My number five was Planet Terror. My number four was Marvin's Room. My number three was 12 Monkeys. My number two was Akiru. And my number one favorite cancer/contagion movie was 50-50. Now, as you might notice, Ed is being incredibly silent. That's because he has wonky internet connections at the hospital, so we ended up losing him. So what we're going to do is I'll just read off his list for him, and we're just going to have to call this goodbye. His number 10 was Neil Marshall's Doomsday. He doesn't have anything to say about it. It's just kind of filler for his Oh, yeah.
That's good, because I hated that movie and thought it was terrible.
What? No. Doomsday?
Doomsday. It's awful.
I
hated
seen it.
Then
number nine is P.T. Anderson's Magnolia had a really poignant cancer subplot involving Jason Robards. And that's true. I like that movie. I don't. Did you? You either hated it or didn't see it, one or the other. But
I never saw it.
It's all right. And then his number eight was Breck Eisner's The Crazies, the Romero remake. And then
I've heard it's good.
The remake or the original?
The remake.
I didn't even know they remade it. Actually, I've seen the original. I like
Timothy Oliphant.
Timothy Oliphant. Hello, Oliphant.
Mm-hmm. And then Oliphantastic.
Fantastic. And then his number seven was Zack Snyder's Dawn of the Dead remake, also a Romero remake. And then his number six was Christmas Tales. Number five was 28 Days Later. Number four is Contagion. Number three, 12 Monkeys. Number two, 50-50. And his number one was The Fountain. Okay, well, that kind of sucks that we lost Ed at the end of this. But, you know, technology's a bitch. But I know that Ethan and I are both... wishing him well, and we just want him to get back to talking shit about movies and, you know, not liking Iron Man 3, because I knew that was coming 10 miles off with Ed. And, but, you know, hey, you know, we're all made up of different parts and different experiences, and we like stuff differently, and that's fine. Okay, before we go, do you have anything else to add, Ethan?
Not currently, no. Slowly getting unburied from being unpacked, and now at the added that my mother and my sister finally moved, I can finally get settled into our new place.
That's very good. That's very good. Yep, same thing here. Nothing really going on here. I've finally gotten to the point to where I like have like some a couple of shows edited together to where I can just, you know, throw them up if we end up ever unable to do it. But this is a show I want to get up quickly so that, you know, so Ed has something to listen to. But. But yeah, I guess that brings us to an end of our show. And again, we just wish Ed the best of luck. And he's been our friend longer than this. And we're not just being topical. We just wanted to give him something to do for a night. So that was cool. That was a lot of fun to do. So I guess that means until next week, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Ethan.
And what? What should we let fly now? Let your chemo fly? Yeah, let your
chemo fly. Yes, let your bone marrow fly.
Bone marrow fly. Your G-tube fly. I got nothing.
I got nothing. Yeah.
I was all right for a while. I could smile for a while. But I saw you last night. You held my hand so tight as you stopped to say hello. Oh, you wished me well. You couldn't tell that I've been crying over you, crying over you. But you said so long, left me standing. Crying, 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 it's hard to understand, but the touch of your hand can start me crying. I thought that I was over you, but it's true, so true. I love you even more than I did before. But darling, what can I do? For you don't love me, and I'll always be crying over you, crying over you. Thank you.
grass was cut by Uncool Aaron.
Yeah! Woo-hoo!